Welcome to the ESAC Anthropolitical Podcast, where we delve into captivating world of anthropological research and its real-world impacts. In today's episode, we're excited to introduce Dr. Molly Fitzpatrick, whose pioneering work offers valuable insights into the intersections of care, morality, and the natural world. Molly's PhD research examined the alternative birth movement in Bali, Indonesia, where she critically explored care as a moral practice. Her research delved into how ideas of the quote-unquote natural are constructed and take on political and moral significance in the context of two natural birth clinics. In 2023, her dissertation received the prestigious Jahrespreis from the Philosophical Faculty of the University of Zurich, marking her exceptional contributions to the field. Currently, she is a postdoctoral researcher and lecturer at the university. Her passion and enthusiasm for teaching have made her classes incredibly popular, consistently drawing in students, myself included. Her ability to engage and inspire is truly outstanding. In today's episode, Molly shares a deeply personal vignette from her time in Bali's birth clinic, offering a rarely discussed perspective on the moral and emotional complexities of fieldwork. She reflects on navigating difficult ethical situations and how researchers manage the delicate balance between personal discomfort and professional duty. We are incredibly fortunate and grateful that Molly has taken time from her busy schedule to give us a glimpse into her research and experiences. So sit back, relax, and let yourself be transported to Bali.
"All we can do is a C-section," the doctor said, looking directly at me. I had asked her what pain medication options Selina, a 38-year-old woman from Switzerland, had at this stage in labor. The doctor's statement led to the most challenging moment I had faced since starting my fieldwork. Halfway into my ethnographic research into the natural birth movement in Bali, Indonesia, I had trained to become a doula, or a non-medical birth support person. Being a doula enabled me to forge intimate and emotional connections with women during labor, leading to important insights for my research. But my new role also came with significant challenges, as I was soon about to find out. Selina had just been told by a rather stern hospital midwife that after more than 20 hours of labor, her cervical dilation had barely progressed. She was still only 2 centimeters dilated of the 10 necessary for childbirth. It was therefore too early for an epidural, the doctor explained to me, hardly acknowledging Selina as she spoke. In this hospital, they do not give women an epidural before 6 centimeters of dilation because it might slow down labor too much. I turned to Selina. She looked frightened and fragile lying on the hospital bed, lit up by fluorescent lighting that bounced off the large mirror covering one entire wall of the windowless room. Selina looked up at me with hopelessness in her eyes, and when I turned back to the doctor, her questioning gaze made me feel like she was putting me in the position of Selina's spokesperson, in the place of the husband that she had perhaps expected to be interacting with. I asked the doctor to give us a moment. As she left, Selina started breathing through another painful contraction. I leaned over to massage her lower back, gently reminding her to breathe. When the contraction subsided and Selina closed her eyes to rest a moment, I looked beyond her into the mirror and stared at my own reflection. I could feel myself falling apart inside, even though my reflection stared back at me unwaveringly. I began to panic and thought, am I really going to have to decide whether Selina will have a C-section? I had met Selina at Ibu Clinic, a midwifery clinic located about 20 kilometers to the northeast in a small village with traditional Balinese-style houses. Selina had chosen Ibu Clinic because she wanted to give birth naturally, without medical interventions or pain medication. She had heard about the clinic and its founder, a midwife from the US who is a well-known proponent of natural birth during a previous visit to Bali. But it was not just Ibu Clinic that drew Selina to Bali. After a year of casual on and off dating, Selina had gotten pregnant unexpectedly from a man she knew through mutual friends. When she had told him about the pregnancy, he broke off the relationship and said that he did not want to be involved in the child's life. determined to keep the pregnancy but feeling anxious about the prospect of navigating pregnancy, childbirth and motherhood alone, Selena thought back to the times in her life when she had been most happy. Those times had been during holidays on Bali. As she emphasized repeatedly, Bali is the land of my heart. An impulsive person by her own account, Selena followed her gut feeling and booked a plane ticket. A few days before Selena's labor started, I interviewed her in the waiting room of Ibu Clinic. It was then that I offered to support her as a doula, explaining that I would also use my observations from her birth for my research. Though several of Selena's friends from Switzerland had settled in Bali over the years, and she was thus not completely alone on the island, she was happy to find someone to accompany her during labor from beginning to end. A few days later, Selena went into labor. She was brought to Ibu Clinic at about 8 a.m. in the morning by Emily, a friend from Switzerland who now lived in Bali, along with Emily's 9-year-old daughter. Throughout the day, Emily and her daughter moved in and out of the birthing room. Selena told me that she had seldomly experienced physical pain in her life. She had never faced a serious illness and rarely felt period cramps. She speculated that this might explain why the contractions overwhelmed her so. Indeed, each contraction caught her by complete surprise. She reacted by tensing up every muscle, curling her toes, tightly closing her legs, and turning her knees inwards. It was at about 7 p.m. that evening when Emily first brought up the idea of transferring to a hospital. Emphasizing the relief that an epidural had given her during her daughter's birth, Emily suggested that Selena might want the same. Mention of the hospital and the prospect of pain relief sparked something in Selena. She became fixated on the idea and began calculating the time required to get to the hospital. "Just one more hour, just one more hour," she started chanting to herself. But, more than 3 hours later, Selena had still not received the epidural she so desperately wanted. Instead, she continued to battle contraction after contraction, and I was looking in the mirror, fighting back tears. To avoid overstepping my role as both an ethnographer and a doula, the only thing I could think to do was to pull myself completely out of the situation, even though this went against both my ethnographic sensibility and the doula's ethos of continuous support. I escaped silently and headed to the toilet. After steadying myself, I returned to the delivery room to find the doctor performing another vaginal exam. The whole room sighed with relief when she announced that Selena's dilation had progressed to 6 centimeters. Assuming this meant she could finally receive her epidural, I was so surprised when Selena exclaimed that with a dilation of 6 centimeters, she felt that she could make it to 10 without pain medication. Now that I myself have given birth, I'm even more impressed with how Selena managed to go from complete despair to a renewed confidence in her body at that crucial moment. She labored through the contractions with a newfound determination, and a little over 3 hours later, she pushed out a healthy baby girl who she named Maya. Though without giving Maya to her mother, the doctor started handing her to one of the midwives so she could take Maya to a separate room for 6 hours of observation, a standard medical procedure in the hospital. I interrupted the doctor and insisted that she give Maya to her mother first, even if only for a few seconds. The fact that the doctor immediately conceded filled me with relief, but it also made me wonder about the medical urgency of the observation period. Several months later, when Selena and Maya came to visit me in Zurich, I asked her to reflect on her birthing experience. She shared how difficult it was for her when Maya was taken away straight after birth, but emphasized that being able to hold her briefly made all the difference. She remained unaware of my role in facilitating that first embrace. In fact, many of the moments that had stood out to me, such as my small breakdown, did not figure in Selena's narrative at all. Finally, I asked her if she would choose to give birth in Bali again, knowing what she now knew. Without hesitation, she answered confidently, "I would do it again, yes, I really would, because it is a part of my life path." While she stressed that it was also fate that we had met and that I had been there to support her, I still wondered whether I acted appropriately, both as a doula and as a researcher. While I deeply admire Selena's convictions of destiny and acceptance, for me the what-ifs still echo through my mind. Perhaps they always will.